produced by Wayne Hall, Bill Govier, Preston Frazier, and Jeffrey Chryselius. This is Yes Music Podcast, episode 426. What Did They Do Next? Part 12A, Eddie Jobson.
Hi, this is Alan White from Yes, and you're listening to Yes Music Podcast.
Welcome to episode 426 of the Yes Music Podcast, two fans' exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band. I'm your host, Kevin Mulrine, and co-host Mark Anthony Kay will be along a little bit later. You can always get involved with the podcast via the various different ways on the site, yesmusicpodcast.com. In the UK, we're coming to the end of the second week of total lockdown, and my friends and family are currently coping quite well, thanks to the wonderful work of the NHS, including my wife Sarah, and all the other key workers. Thank you to each and every one of them. As I said last week, we are aiming to ensure the YMP provides a bit of normality through this difficult time. So this week, we are perhaps bending the rules slightly to consider what Eddie Jobson did after leaving Yes. Listen on for all the disclaimers. Around the interwebs, there were a few rather important updates this week. On Facebook, Stephen Lamb shared the UK and European launch of the paperback version of Dave Watkinson's fabulous book, John Anderson and the Warriors, The Road to Yes. And Tony Handley showed off his orange vinyl of Dave's John and the Warriors EP. I've got one of those as well. Gabrielle Stoccaro Floriani posted a great solo version of Madrigal from Tomato, and John Kirkman shared a photo of himself signing the first copies of his new book, Tales from Photographic Oceans. I'm looking forward to receiving mine. This week's visitor post haul from Jeffrey Mason includes the following: John Anderson announcing a summer concert at Clearwater, Steve Hackett's live streaming answer to the current concert cancellation epidemic, a video review and demonstration of Steve Howe's 1976 Les Paul, the delay to the release of the much-anticipated Rick Wakeman Red Planet record, the aforementioned grumpy old Rick's Ramblings for April, the sale of Steve Howe's Gibson H1 Mandola, the Quietus.com's feature on the history of UK prog rock, Paul Smith's amazing Yes concert photos from the Leicester concerts in 1980 and then 2014, and photos of Alan White with the Plastic Ono Band at a festival in Toronto in 1969. Once again, an amazing collection. Bill Kilmer also added a YouTube video of a John Anderson solo concert in 2014, and over on Twitter, Dave Watkinson shared a page from his own diary with proof of him meeting Vangelis and Jeff Downes in 1984. And I shared the neat quotation from Mark and me, which Dave has used in his paperback version of his new book. Wow. And speaking of Mark, he was interviewed on Progressive Palaver's show, where he talked about his Project Gemini, and Brian Dilley received his copy of that Watkinson tome. Jazz Sabbath's new cassette was released, and in perhaps the most important news of the week, Henry Potts reported that Yes, featuring Anderson, Rabin and Wakeman, is absolutely, definitely over. Trevor Rabin puts all the rumours to bed in the latest issue of Prog magazine. Well, it was great while it lasted. Miguel Falcao's Play for Chris 6 project received another update this week. You have until the 15th of May 2020 to get involved, and just drop Miguel a line on miguel@miguelbass.com for more details. As always, many thanks to everyone who's been in touch this week, including the commenters on last week's show notes, Paul Tomei and Dave Watkinson.
Welcome to the Yes Music Podcast with Kevin Mulrine and Mark Anthony Kay.
So here we are, and I'm with Mark. Hello, Mark. How are you?
Hello there, Kevin. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm absolutely fine. Thank you very much. So this week, we're going to start the next one of these episodes about What Did They Do Next? And this time, well, there are those listening, I imagine, who'll think that this is a big cheat, and there are those who will be very pleased. But I'll tell you the reason why I did it. It's Eddie Jobson we're going to look at, and of course he was only in the band for a very, very short time, but he did join and then leave, And you could argue that, yes, okay, Tony Kaye joined the band and then left, and Eddie Jolson came in, and then Tony Kaye came back. So we could also be doing this about Tony Kaye. But the real reason we're doing Eddie Jolson is because I quite fancy listening to some Eddie Jolson. And I know very little about Eddie Jolson, which is very, very poor show for me. So I'm going to use this opportunity to stretch the rules, if you want to call it that, and to talk about what Eddie Jolson did when he left the band. So, yes, he was only in there for a very short time. And despite that, he managed to appear, of course, very briefly indeed, in the Owner of a Lonely Heart video. So he was on top of the London skyscraper with the other members of the band at the time, but of course not Tony Kaye, because Tony Kaye wasn't in the band. So is Tony Kaye, from your memory of that video, Mark, not in that video at all?
As far as I remember, I don't remember seeing him at all on the video. I'm talking about Tony Kaye.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So he mustn't be, must he? Because he wasn't in the band at the time. So that's That's just I've never really twigged that. From watching it, no.
So just to clarify my position on this, I don't think this is a cheat at all. According to most information that I've read, he appeared on the video and then was edited out, and all we see is him give like a little fist pump in the air behind a keyboard, essentially for a microsecond, where we see him, right? But it is documented. He was in promotional photographs that were used around that time period with him in it.
Yep.
Right. And it says quite clearly, he did return home to the U.S. as a fully fledged member of Yes and started working on band material. It was only several weeks after that he got told by management that Tony Kaye got put back into the band. Yep. Now, I'm pretty sure that they got pressure by Atlantic Records. I forget now the guy's name slipping me. He's the head of A&R for Atlantic Records in America. He's in that documentary. But anyways, he was all about Tony Kaye. He was saying that Tony Kaye had the look and he had the stage moves. So he was all about Tony Kaye. So I'm very sure that he was saying, I don't know about this Jolson guy. Let's get Tony back and let's give him a couple extra $1,000, maybe a week or something.
Yeah.
And he'll come back, you know. But he was a full-fledged member. This to me is not any sort of, cheating or anything.
No. So he exists on the family trees, as do a couple of other drummers, particularly from the very, very early days when Bill Bruford left briefly. So he exists on those sorts of things, and the fantastic prog magazine Family Tree, which has got all the caricatures of the members on it, he's on that. I don't think he's actually on the list of past members on yesworld.com. I'm 99.9% sure he's not. So we decided to do Eddie Jolson, so let's get on with it. So he was and is a multi-instrumentalist, and his discography, which I looked up, it's a it's a roll call of some of the best acts of the 70s and 80s, isn't it? So we've got Curved Air, Roxy Music, he did solo things, Frank Zappa, UK, and I'm absolutely embarrassed to say that I've never heard any UK, so I'll have to do something about that as well. Jethro Tull, Curved Air again. One that I thought was fascinating, the Bulgarian Women's Choir, apparently. And then he formed something called UKZ or UKZ. Frank Zappa again, UK again, in a different sort of lineup. So that was a trio lineup eventually of UK with Eddie Jolson, John Wetton, and Terry Bozzio. And they actually appeared on the inaugural voyage of the Progressive Rock Cruise to the Edge, where they headlined with Yes and Steve Hackett. So they must have put their differences aside for that, certainly. And the other thing, which I didn't realise, was that he appears on USA by King Crimson as well. So he's certainly done an awful lot, hasn't he?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, he, to me, being a, I guess you can call me a progressive rock nerd because of my extensive catalog of stuff in magazines and books and stuff about the genre. I'm very familiar with Eddie Jobson. This was not a name that was like, Eddie Jobson. I'll be honest, I don't own any of his solo material, which is why I was very excited to talk about this and to get on with it, because me being a huge Frank Zappa head, I was very familiar with his material that he'd done. I mean, Frank Zappa is a very strange cat. Okay. He's one of these guys where he'll hire you in the most peculiar way. Like, he'll bring you to a hotel room and say, okay, you know, I heard about you. You're good. You know, pull out your violin here and play, just jam with me in this hotel room. And then they'll play a bit. He'll hang out with the guy. And then all of a sudden he'll tell you 5 minutes before showtime, yeah, you're going to come up on stage and play with us. And he'll be like, what? He goes, yeah, you're coming up right now, which is essentially his audition with Zappa. And, you know, he goes up there. And it says what's interesting about it is that he appeared on the front cover of an album called Zoot Allures in 76.
Yes.
Now, he doesn't appear on that album at all. The thing is, though, that once you're with Zappa and whenever he starts doing things like photographs and stuff, it doesn't matter if you're on the record or not. You're a part of the band then, so you're in the photograph, right? Because if you look at it, he is featured on the album Zappa in New York, which came out in 78, but was actually recorded in 76, right? But all through those times, Zappa was notorious for recording like at every drop of the hat. Any free time he had and there was a studio nearby, they would go in and record stuff. So that's why he appears on so many different albums years later. Yeah. A track or two on Studio 10, a track or two on Shut Up and Play Your Guitar, you know, and then a huge album came out later called Lather. He was on that. And then ironically, I didn't even realize this because I had bought this and didn't go thoroughly through it. But years later, you know, well, just a few years back, actually, they released some live concerts that he did as part of the catalog. And one of them was called Philly 76. Right. And he appears on that. And that's a full concert with him playing violin and keyboards. So, it's just he is all over the place. And me being a big fan of UK as well, I was very familiar with that material. Mm. So he's a very, very accomplished player.
Yeah. So he's sort of carrying on the tradition, isn't he, of Steve Howe appearing on the front cover of Time and the Word and not playing a note on that and various other examples that we can think of. But here's what Wikipedia says about the dalliance he had with Yes. Jobson was briefly a member of Yes in 1983 after the departure of keyboardist Tony Kaye. Jobson neither recorded nor performed live with Yes. His only official appearances, as you've just said, with the band were in promotional photographs and in the video for Owner of a Lonely Heart. But the video was released after Kaye had rejoined and Jobson had departed. So he's almost completely, as you said, edited out. So there is a suggestion in that Wikipedia article that Kaye... He was told that Kaye was back in the band and that the two of them would be sharing keyboard duties, and Jobson declined and left the band at that stage. So goodness knows what the actual situation was. And there was a very long and detailed blog post, which I can't now find online. I think through yesfans.com you can still find it, where Eddie Jobson went into his experience with Yes, and it was pretty damning. From his point of view, he was really quite upset in a similar way to the way Peter Banks felt that he was treated by the band. Now, we will never know whether that's true or not. But is that a blog post that you've come across?
I was a very, very dedicated member and poster on Yes Fans, that message board. Mm. So I do remember, in fact, reading that and being very saddened by what I read, you know, because, you know, when you love a band like how we love Yes, you know, in our eyes, you know, when you first get into them, you think, you know, they can do no wrong, that they're all together having a cup of teas together and ho, 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 laughing together. And, you know, they're all good friends. And then you start realizing as years go by and you get more deeper into it and realize how the business is, it's not like that. You know, it's all about business a lot of the times. And sometimes people get hurt along the ways. And apparently Mr. Jobson is one of these people that also got burned by the wrath of Yes.
So we're not going to spend a lot of time wondering about that and trying to work it out. But I do have John Kirkman's fantastic dialogue, The Yes Interviews, and it's volume one, where there is an interview with Tony Kaye himself, where he explains from his point of view what was going on there, which I thought was very interesting when I had a look at it today. So I'll just read a little bit out of that. Right, just let me find the right bit. So John Kirkman says, not only that Tony Kaye was back in the band, that surprised me because there was the talk of Eddie Jobson being in the band. I think Eddie is in the video for Owner of Lonely Heart. And Tony Kaye comes back saying, yeah, Owner of Lonely Heart, I had actually left the band. I'd had enough in London, I was sick of London, and I was sick of the band. So I quit the band. I was booked to do a tour with Badfinger anyway. So I came back to do the tour, and then Tommy died. I'm assuming that's somebody from Badfinger. So that didn't happen. So I was back in LA hanging about. I had no idea what was going on with the band. Then he says, I was at a swap meet, not something we have in the UK, swap meets, but I understand what they are, selling T-shirts. And I had my ghetto blaster with me, and I heard this song and thought, that sounds familiar, and it was Owner of a Lonely Heart. And about a week after that, Trevor called me and said, we're going on tour. Are you in? and yeah, so that's his take on it. So he had pretty much written the thing off, and then he had a phone call, as usual with Yes, It Seems, and he was back in the band for that massive tour. So it does lead you to wonder exactly how much of Tony Kaye's actual playing there is on the album. But again, that's not what we're talking about just now. We're talking about Eddie Jobson. And, you know, Jobson himself seems to be a bit of a controversial character because he wrote that blog post we've just been talking about. And then very recently, I don't know if you picked this up, but I remember, and I can't remember exactly what it was, that there was a tour only in the last couple of years or an album or something which he got into trouble for. But I don't remember what that was. Do you?
No, I can't recall.
No. Okay. I'm sure somebody will let us know what that was. But what we're going to do is have a look at the Green album. So this was created really before, during and after his Yes tenure, because that tenure was so short. So this solo album, so you said you haven't ever heard this solo album. I've never heard this solo album, but it is one of the ones that is always held up as one of his best solo albums. Do you know anything about this thing at all, the Green album?
I don't really know a whole heck of a lot about it. I remember once or twice, like, hearing about it when, you know, whenever he would do interviews and stuff like that, when he would reminisce about stuff he did in the past, and he mentions doing it. And he also, when he was talking about it, a lot of the times what would come up was the fact that there was some sort of like effort done with another band in this, right? A bunch of session musicians that played with him on this.
Yeah.
And there was always that question of how many things they actually did and who did what. I believe the band was called Zinc or something like that.
Yeah.
I was always kind of interested in it in that sense, because as we learn through going through these different albums with Yes and with other bands that are related with them, sometimes things are not as they seem. You know, like, look at Tony Kaye. Just now, we just came up with that question. Now, how much did Tony Kaye really play on 90125?
Yeah.
Right? So how much did these other people play on this record?
Yeah. It's a very interesting one. And just before we leave this, because, of course, we're going to, all of us, listeners and Mark and I, we're all going to listen to this album during the week and then come back to it in detail next week. But just before we go, I don't know if I'm right in assuming this, but do you think his solo stuff will have a lot to do with UK? And for my benefit, can you just give me a very brief overview of what UK did, who were the main people in it, and what kind of style of music that is?
Well, there's definitely shades of UK mm-hmm. in his solo stuff. UK was fantastic. I mean, UK had Bill Bruford on drums. Yep. John Wetton on bass and uh-huh. vocals, and Alan Halsworth on guitar. I mean, yeah. Right there alone, I mean, you know, like, what more could you ask for? This is like, you know, every prog fan's like dream come true kind of band. And you have Eddie Jobson there, you know, playing as well, keyboards and yeah. violin as well. So, I mean, it's just incredible. I mean, I own the first UK record. I have some of the other ones, I think, on CD somewhere, but I made sure to buy the debut album on vinyl because, I mean, Alan Halsworth is such a phenomenal guitar player. I mean, personally, it's my belief that every progressive rock fan should own this album in their collection now.
All right.
I'm guessing that you do not own this,
do
you?
No, I do not.
Well, you must now find the means to get this record. It's not difficult to get.
No.
So that you have that to your advantage. So, but I'll tell you, once you own it, you'll kind of wonder to yourself why you waited so long to own it, because it is really that good. It is truly, I think, a moment in prog rock history that everybody needs to have in their, you know, possession.
All right. Well, we'll need to come back to UK at another time, and as it's got Eddie Jobson in there and all sorts of other connections to, yes, I'm sure we can find a way of listening to that. But for the moment, we are going to concentrate on the Green Album, and I'm very much looking forward to finding out what that is all about.
I think you're going to actually thoroughly enjoy it. One thing that's kind of surprised me about it in general is that Eddie Jobson can sing pretty well.
Oh, right. Okay, well, perhaps I should have brought him on to 90125 instead of John Anderson, but that was certainly not going to happen. Brilliant stuff. Thank you very much indeed for the moment, Mark.
This is Two Pence with Mark Anthony Kay and Kevin Mulrine.
Right, Mark is still with me as we go into our Two Pence. Hello again, Mark.
Hello there, Kevin.
So, Fred Barringer suggested this one. It's something we've talked about before, but there's an added element to it this time. So, Fred on Twitter said, given Yes might finally be preparing new music, how about, should Jay Shellen participate in the recording of the next studio album as the likely tour drummer and future official member of Yes? And then Dave Watkinson pointed out that the first photograph we've seen of the back cover of Steve Howe's autobiography, it's got a picture of Yes in 2019, and Jay is in the picture. So what can we read into that then, Mark?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious. I think that the plans are in motion to have Jay take over the throne full time. And I mean, I'm very happy about that, because I think that if anybody deserves to sit in that drum stool, it's Mr. Jay Shellen.
Yeah, I agree as well. We've both seen Jay Shellen live, and there are those who don't think he has quite the touch or the feel of Alan White or a Bill Bruford. But I was very happy with what he did when I've seen him live.
Yeah, I think that they're incorrect. So yeah, you can boo me if you want, but I think that he's more than capable. He's done songs fantastically well. Gates of Delirium, he completely owned it. I mean, what a great song performance he had of that. And I honestly think that he's the man for it. I mean, we saw, you know, Steve's son play on there in a limited fashion. He wasn't too bad, but I think he's a little too jazzy for what they need. I think that Jay is perfect for it. He's very well versed in progressive stuff. He's done a lot of stuff with Billy Sherwood on prior records. So he's the guy.
Yeah, I think you're right. And he has this ability to pick anything up. So there are a wide variety of different styles within Yes Music for drumming, because you have got the Bill Bruford, slightly more jazzy, as you've said, and the Alan White, slightly more, but people do make a big deal of how more straightforward and so on it is. But as we've discussed before, Alan White created the drum parts for Relayer, so you cannot tell me that he's a more straight-ahead drummer. He just plays what's appropriate for the music. And I think Jay fits into that mold perfectly.
I agree 150%. I think anybody who has questioned, you know, that kind of style of Alan White, I mean, just needs to listen to Relayer. And, you know, Jay has played all of it. He's been playing all this music. He's been playing the Bill Bruford stuff. He's been playing the Alan White stuff. I mean, I think he's more than, you know, proven the point that he can step in.
Yeah. And writing as well. I mean, obviously, Alan will be involved with the writing of the next Yes album. But Jay involved in the writing as well. I mean, there's no way that you can really play on an album and not have something to do with the creation of it, surely.
Yeah, of course. I mean, coming up with drum parts is a form of writing as well. Sure, you don't get maybe credited as a songwriter in doing that, right? I mean, a lot of the times Alan got credited for songs because he contributed piano parts, right? Or piano ideas that went into songs, you know? So that's great. And I mean, and Alan can play guitar, but who knows, maybe Jay Shellen can play guitar as well. I mean, I think that when he got involved with Billy Sherwood, I'm more than willing to guess that him and Billy had some sit-down sessions and writing songs together. So
yeah. And Jay does seem like an extreme, like Billy himself, they do seem very, very friendly and very much into the fact that they're in the band. And that's what you want, really. So I suppose maybe we're going to have a little bit of a tradition opening up in Yes. So the outgoing musician picks the new musician, as it were. So Chris Squire picks Billy Sherwood and perhaps Alan. And I know Alan is very, very happy and gets on very well with Jay. And he said as much when we interviewed him a few weeks back. So maybe that's what's going to happen. There's going to be a kind of apprenticeship like there was with Billy Sherwood. And then you hand over eventually.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. And I mean, I would highly recommend doing it that way because look at how smoothly the transition happened between Chris Squire and Billy Sherwood.
Yeah, absolutely right. All right, so I think there's not much more to say than that. We definitely agree with that 2 pence. Jay Shallon should indeed participate in the recording of the next album and also the writing, I would say. And yes, I think he will end up as a future official member of Yes. So thank you very much indeed, Fred, for suggesting that 2 pence. Of course, don't take our word for it. What do you think? Add your comments to the show notes for this week. But at the moment, thank you very much indeed, Mark.
You're very welcome, Kevin.
Whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.
Just before we go, here's half the patrons that help to keep the lights on at YMP Towers here. Yes Music podcast producers are Jeffrey Griselius, Preston Frazier, Bill Govier and Wayne Hall. And half of the Yes Music podcast patrons are Mark James Lang, Martin Kelberg, Michael O'Connor, Miguel Falcao, Neil Caffrey, Paul Hales, Paul Tomei, Paul Wilson, Peter Herndon, Lobate Scarp, Rachel Hadaway, Mark Zarkall-Bags, Robert Naser, Scott Colombo, Scott Smith, Simon Barrow, Stephen Lamb, Steve Dill, Steve Perry, Steve Rode, Steve Scott, Stephen Raw, Terence Sadler, Tim Stannard, Todd Dudley, Tony Handley, Joseph Cottrell, Keith Hoisington and William Hayes. Many thanks indeed to Robert and David. And incidentally, if you're a patron and you don't seem to receive the regular updates from patreon.com, then please do let us know. For example, if you haven't heard how you can take part in our secret project, then please do let me know. Just send an email to show@yesmusicpodcast.com and I'll try and help. So that's just about all the time we have this week. Thanks for listening so much once again. I do hope we'll be back next week to talk about that album in detail. But in the meantime, please do keep up with the show at Facebook, at Twitter or on Instagram. So until next week, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.